This has been a reading of the Agricultural Cycle by Rudolf Steiner. I'm reading an appendix that is Further Agricultural Indications by Rudolf Steiner. I just want to mention this book is published by the Biodynamic Farming and Gardening Association, Incorporated, Kimberton, Pennsylvania, and that it is there is a link to their website on my website on the page for this book. And the book is for sale there, and I hope I've only read some parts of it. There are other things by Aaron Reed Pfeiffer and a number of other notes, and there's an entire set of pictures of Steiner's actual notes in German with English translations next to them. Very nice. I hope you can take advantage of that. Appendix B, Further Agricultural Indications by Rudolf Steiner. The following reports are included here as a stimulus to further research and reflection. Readers should bear in mind that most of these indications are quoted from memory and may contain errors or misunderstandings. Furthermore, because the indications were given to specific individuals in specific situations, they may not be of general applicability. Part 1 is on various fertilizers, Part 2 on soil conditions, Part 3 on pests, weeds, and plant diseases, Part 4 on companion plants, Part 5 on the biodynamic preparations, Part 6 on spiritual beings. Part 1 on various fertilizers. The following three sections, A through C, cover a series of conversations between Rudolf Steiner and the chemist Johann Simon Streicher. At the time of their first conversation in 1920, Dr. Streicher was working at the fertilizer research laboratory of the BASF, Badische Annalen- und Sodafabrik in Ludwigshafen, Germany, where the process for producing artificial fertilizers from atmospheric nitrogen had recently been developed. In 1921, he gave up a potential career at the BASF to join the Small Anthroposophical Research Institute in Stuttgart, where he worked on producing plant colors for artists. A. Report by J.S. Streicher of a conversation with Rudolf Steiner in Dornach on a short walk between Steiner's house and his studio, October 9, 1920. Note that the following indication applies specifically to impoverished and degraded soils, and that the dialogue is not necessarily reproduced verbatim. Dr. Streicher. Artificial fertilizers, mixtures of potassium salts, chemically treated phosphates, for example superphosphate, nitrogen salts of all kinds, calcium nitrate, etc., are commonly used today in Central Europe. The nitrogen salts, especially ammonium sulfate, are regarded as yield regulators. The cereal plants and the soil are accustomed to the artificial fertilizers. They are more accustomed to them than the farmers would like. From the standpoint of spiritual science, should the farmers be dissuaded from using any kind of artificial fertilizer? Dr. Steiner. Artificial fertilizers can be used. Today this is even a necessity. But the salts that are added to the soil must be better chosen than is usually the case. Above all, no nitrogen salts should be used. For today's so broadly impoverished and degraded soils, a mixture of fertilizer salts that contains potassium, sulfur and magnesium, especially sulfur and magnesium, would be very appropriate. And in order that the plants can also assimilate these salts, certain poisons must be added to the salts. Dr. Steiner recommended the questioner get in touch with Herr Stegmann. Dr. Steiner then directed the questioner's attention to the life processes of the birch, to the upward and downward weaving of the plant's etheric body. He then continued, "The etheric body of most of today's cultivated plants has become weak. Mineral fertilizers have to be brought to the plant. But the right mineral fertilizers, no nitrogen fertilizers, no kinds of nitrogen salts. However, even when the minerals are the correct ones, the cereal plant's etheric body can grasp them only with difficulty." Instead of grasp, Dr. Steiner used the expression to string them upward, auffädeln. Therefore, poisons have to be added to the mineral fertilizers. These will then allow the etheric body of the cereal plant to grasp the mineral substances and string them upward, so that they are carried into the body of the plant like pearls on a pearl necklace. With this our first conversation ended, for we then stood at the door of his studio. It was ended with a cordial handshake and a hearty Auf Wiedersehen. In his original report, Stryker comments that he was still new to anthroposophy at the time and did not know what to make of the poison additive. Hence his next conversation with Rudolf Steiner, section B below, is described by Stryker as a kind of probing session, in which Stryker brought up several possible poisonous fertilizers, none of which, however, met with Steiner's approval. Thus the nature and identity of the poison additive did not emerge until a subsequent series of conversations, section C. Section B. Report by a stenographer of part of a group discussion with Rudolf Steiner at the Research Institute in Stuttgart, December 17, 1921. Stryker. Another matter that we are concerned with here, besides plant colors, is one that I was brought into contact with during my youth. I grew up in the country and have concerned myself a great deal with the problem of fertilizers for plants. Stryker's father was a farmer, baker, and grain dealer. In this regard, I am very disturbed by the present situation and the prevailing opinions. People have not gotten much beyond what was inaugurated by Liebig, who enriched the soil with mineral substances, nitrogen, phosphoric acid, potash. At its present state of development, the fertilizer industry produces nitrogen that is bound to very strong acids, to hydrochloric acid and sulfuric acid, and agriculture is now faced with the danger, which has already become a reality to some extent, that fertilizers will be added to the soil regardless of how the plants relate to them. These fertilizers create an acid reaction in the soil, and in a dry summer, the results are disastrous. Steiner. In point of fact, the only real healthy fertilizer is cattle manure, and all further considerations must be based on this. However, we also need to find a means, and I don't think we are far enough along yet to fully describe this, a means of bringing about the healthy nitrogen content of the soil in a way that allows the soil to become worked through by the earthworms and other such animals. And then it is also a matter of finding the necessary weeds, that is, the necessary companion plants. As I said yesterday to Herr Stegmann, who has now dedicated himself to the farming activity, here it is important for the plant to, for example, to plant Saint Foin, Onobrichis vitiofolia, at least along the edges of wheat and grain fields. Such influences definitely do exist. You should investigate systematically how important it is to plant horseradish along the edges of your potato fields, and to have a sprinkling of cornflowers, Centauri cyanus, in your grain fields, but to eradicate the field poppy, Papaver roes. These things must be considered in connection with the fertilizer question. Otherwise, you are left with the abstract principles of acid formation in the soil and the simplistic question of how to counteract them. Over time, this completely destroys the soil for plant growth. The soil simply becomes deaf. Stryker. The farmers, too, have the feeling that the soil is impoverished by the use of artificial fertilizers. Dr. Steiner. It's not at all a bad expression. They make the soil deaf. On the other hand, one must not fall into the extreme of using plants as fertilizers. These, too, must not be regarded as being favorable for plant growth. Really, the only ideal fertilizer is cattle manure, not plant manure. This must be the basic principle. And then one must also be clear that very much depends on the companion plants, namely the legumes, particularly Saint Foin. Herbaceous plants such as these should, if possible, be planted in a dry soil, whereas cereal plants need a more moist soil. But here one's whole personal relationship to the seeds is certainly also of importance. No matter how strange this sounds to contemporary chemists and biologists, if you really test this carefully, you will find that it makes a difference in how well something flourishes, whether the sower simply takes the seeds from the sack and throws them down, or whether he has the habit of shaking them in his hand a little bit and gently throwing or strewing them. There you will find differences that are of importance in relation to the question of fertilizers. It would be good for you to discuss these matters with farmers, who cannot help but be interested in them. They have experienced some of these things, only their experiences have been forgotten. Modern agriculture no longer has room for such experiences. I would advise you, I think it will serve you well, to look in old peasant almanacs for clues about the fertilizer question. They contain indications that are sometimes curious, but which you will certainly be able to formulate in chemical terms. Stryker. Modern farmers, especially just now, have had a difficult time because their cattle herds in the last year have been decimated by epidemics and by lack of fodder. Dr. Steiner. Here, scientists only need to develop the courage to point to the main culprit. The extravagant praise for stall feeding in recent years is certainly connected with the incidence of tuberculosis among cattle, and also with the fact that although for a time the animals may perhaps produce more milk or whatever, their state of health over generations inevitably declines. Even the manure collected from the pasture by the peasant woman, with a basket on her back and a shovel in her hand, is undoubtedly better than the manure that comes from stall feeding. It is harmful for the animals to absorb the breath of a neighboring animal while they are feeding. On the pastures you will find that the animals always keep a certain distance from one another. Look at the animals grazing on the pasture. You will find that of their own accord they space themselves at considerable distances, because they cannot abide the breath of neighboring animals while they are feeding. Just think how easily it can happen that an animal gets a scrape, and if a neighboring animal breathes on the scrape, this will certainly be a cause for disease. Stryker. I may perhaps mention some further tendencies in science regarding the use of artificial fertilizers and synthetic substances. Having succeeded in the synthesis of nitrogen compounds, scientists now boast about discovering the synthesis of protein. They find it tiresome to have to go via plants in order to obtain protein, and today there is already a movement afoot to skip this indirect route and give the artificial nitrogen fertilizers directly to animals. This may sound strange, but scientists have already done extensive research along these lines. They have great hopes for synthetic urea, which they add as a concentrate to ordinary hay for cattle, and which has also been tried out on sheep. The idea is that certain bacteria live in the rumen of the animal, and that these bacteria will break down the urea and transform it into protein. If these experiments are continued, and if farmers become accustomed to feeding urea and other synthetic substances, I fear the present symptoms of deterioration in our livestock will get much worse. Dr. Steiner. Well, experiments conducted in that way can never lead to true results. In the sphere of vitality, if I may so express it, the law of inertia must prevail. It is possible that the effects of such measures will not be visible in the present generation or the following, but only in the third generation. The vitalizing influence extends beyond the first few generations. If you restrict your investigations to the present day and do not extend them over generations, you get a totally wrong picture. And then, in the third generation, one looks for quite different causes than the feeding of the grandparent generation. Vitality does not collapse immediately, but in succeeding generations the vitality does collapse. Stryker. In studying this question last year, I came upon a piece of work that gained considerable publicity in England during the war, the research of the English botanist W. B. Bottomley. Bottomley discovered that there are certain plants that cannot absorb mineral fertilizers directly. If one makes a nutrient solution out of potassium phosphates and nitrogen salts, certain plants will not live for long. On the other hand, Bottomley observed that if he encouraged a certain bacterial life in peat, the humus in the peat would break down into substances that he could not fully characterize chemically, but which he regards as being similar to the vitamins in biology. When he added these substances in extremely tiny amounts to the nutrient solution, the plants grew extraordinarily well. The substances derived from the peat he termed oxymones, life-promoting substances. During the war, when England was obliged to increase its cereal production, this humogen, as Bottomley then named it, was produced in large quantities and added to the soil. In some cases, it had an extraordinary effect. In other cases, the effect was absent. Steiner. Which plants received this blessing? Stryker. It was not said. Dr. Steiner. Food plants? Steiker, in cereal production. Dr. Steiner, if it is done with food plants, the people who consume this food will not suffer much harm, but their children may possibly be born with hydrocephalus. From the whole process, it is evident that the development of the plant has been hypertrophied. And when such plants are used for nourishment, the result is a malformation of the nervous system in the next generation. One must understand that certain effects in the life process only become evident in the next generation, or perhaps even in the one after that. That's how far the investigations have to extend. Steiker, I could also mention in this connection the experiments of a scientist from Freiburg who made organic mercury salts and fertilized vegetable gardens with them during the war. Growth was remarkably enhanced by this treatment. People even began to hope that the whole question of plant growth would rapidly be solved and that vegetables could be grown very quickly. These vegetables too showed hypertrophied development. Dr. Steiner, there it would naturally be a matter of investigating whether or not the children of those who consumed them later became impotent. Such things must all be investigated, for in this sphere one simply cannot conduct experiments within too narrow limits. With a vital process, one is dealing with something that continues through time, and whose strength only diminishes over time. Part C. Report by J.S. Steiker of three conversations with Rudolf Steiner at the Research Institute in Stuttgart, 1922. In a subsequent conversation, I asked Dr. Steiner whether the use of the well-known Stassfurter double salt of potassium and magnesium, its K2SO4, MgSO4, 6H2O, would be appropriate in light of his earlier suggestion in Dornach. Parenthesis, this salt is produced in large-scale industrial processes from the Stassfurter Abraum, overburden salts. It never contains more than 2% chlorine, and thus has a very small chloride content. Close parenthesis. Rudolf Steiner approved of this suggestion. This salt would be very suitable for bringing real improvement to the soils that are presently so degraded. However, it could completely fulfill its purpose only if the salt had the least possible chlorine content, and only if care were taken to spread it, preferably in the spring, in such a form that the plants could also absorb it. This would be possible if one added to the salt a very strong poison. In a subsequent conversation several weeks later, the poison additive, in quotes, was discussed with Rudolf Steiner. He indicated that this would have to be an extract from a poisonous plant. He characterized the extract from purple foxglove, Digitalis purpurea, as being the most suitable, provided the extract was very strong, 10%. In a still later discussion, Rudolf Steiner emphasized the simultaneous use of companion plants or border plants, quote, even if it is difficult for people nowadays to understand the effectiveness of such measures, unquote. Quote, on the other hand, the suggestion to use, for example, St. Foin as a border plant should not be taken in such a silly way that one goes and sows the whole farm with it and then awaits what happens, unquote, as was his experience in one case. Steiker comments in conclusion that the mineral fertilizers were recommended by Steiner as a kind of remedy for the type of permanently impoverished land that he later mentioned in 1924 in Lecture 5 of the Agriculture course. It's page 92 of this book. As such, Steiner's earlier indication provides a bridge between today's situation and the fully organic farm of the day after tomorrow. See footnote, the third discussion, page 137. Part D. Report by the agronomist and physician Count Adalbert von Kaiserlinck of a conversation between his father, Count Karl von Kaiserlinck, and Rudolf Steiner. For a new orchard located on a moist, peaty soil, Dr. Steiner recommended treating the soil with potash magnesia. Part E. Reported by the physicist Rudolf E. Meyer. During a conversation at the Guldesmühle about the more or less harmful influences of artificial mineral fertilizers, Dr. Steiner said that in view of the required increases in yield, it might not be possible to avoid using such fertilizers, but harmful consequences for human beings and animals would not fail to ensue. some of these influences would not appear in full for several generations. At any rate, it was necessary to discover and apply remedial measures in good time. The leaves of fruit trees were one such measure, and it was therefore good to plant fruit trees by the fields. A second indication by Dr. Steiner concerned the use of hornmeal as a fertilizer. This had been manufactured at a Gultismühle, at the Gultismühle, and it was further developed at Einsingen, a nearby town. In answer to a direct question as to the value of hornmeal as a fertilizer, Dr. Steiner replied that when mixed with ordinary barn manure, hornmeal was among the very best. Subsequently, we asked Dr. Steiner whether roasted or unroasted hornmeal was better. At Einsingen, we produce unroasted hornmeal, whereas almost everywhere else the horn shavings are first subjected to a vigorous drying and roasting process, which has the advantage of making them easier to grind down, but which also involves a loss in weight of up to about 15%, mostly of water. Dr. Steiner answered to the effect that unroasted hornmeal was better on account of the higher hydrogen content. For the proper effect on the manure, this hydrogen content was in fact more important than the nitrogen content. Modern science had only not yet appreciated the significance of the hydrogen content for the growth of plants. Part F, reported by Frau A. Ganz. No further details known? To a question about the use of mineral fertilizers, Dr. Steiner answered, "If obliged to use mineral fertilizers, one should always mix them first with dung or liquid manure." Dr. Steiner strongly rejected the use of outhouse wastes, saying they should also not be emptied out on fresh compost, quote, "even if the compost will only be needed in 4 years, because it will still contain things that are not good," unquote. Part G, reported by the gardening teacher Gertrude Michels. Some years before the war, 1914, Dr. Steiner said in answer to a question about using night soil, I don't know what that is, that it should not be used because the cycle from the human being to the plant and back to the human being is too short in horticulture. The proper cycle is from the human being to the plant, from the plant to the animal, from the animal again to the plant, and only then from the plant back to the human being. Dr. Steiner repeatedly and expressly rejected the use of peat for the improvement of the soil, not only as a fertilizer, but also for improving the soil physically. Instead, humus and humus again should be given to the soil in every conceivable form, compost, leaf mold, etc. Part 2, on soil conditions. Part A, reported by the agronomist Ernst Stegmann. In planting oats, one should take care that the soil is dried off. The same applies to potatoes and root crops. Wheat and rye, on the other hand, should be sown in a moist soil. Part B, reported by the agronomist and physician Count Adalbert von Kaiserling, the following exchange occurred during a walk with his parents, Karl and Johanna von Kaiserling and Rudolf Steiner, at Hwitsun, 1924. My mother complained about her poorly blooming roses. But Rudolf Steiner believed not much could be done about this. It was due to the excessive iron in the soil. My mother was not satisfied, however, and insisted there must be some way to have the roses bloom more nicely. Rudolf Steiner reflected a moment and then said, "Try adding highly diluted lead." Part 3, on pests, weeds, and plant diseases. Section A, reported by the biochemist Ehrenfried E. Pfeiffer. In Dornach and Arlesheim, we suffer from an awful plague of snails, which eat up all the leaves. To counteract them, Dr. Steiner advised spraying a 0.3% dilution of pine seeds. This is to be understood as referring to the soluble content of these seeds, presumably extracted by pressure, which should be dissolved in water to a dilution of 3 in 1,000, and then sprayed over the affected beds. Dr. Steiner said we should try this, and that it would be very interesting if parallel experiments were made on other beds. To eradicate weeds more effectively, the root stock, as well as the seed of the weed, may be burned. To a question about plant diseases, Dr. Steiner replied, that, properly speaking, there can be no such thing as sick plants, since the etheric is always healthy. If disturbances occur in spite of this, this is a sign that something is wrong in the environment of the plant, especially in the soil. Then it is not the plant that must be healed, but the soil. Thus, to strengthen trees that are growing old, one should try putting fresh soil around their roots, soil taken from the neighborhood of the roots of Prunus spinosa, blackthorn, or birch. Section B, reported by the agronomist Ernst Stegmann. Against wireworm, Limonius, Dr. Steiner suggested the following. Expose rainwater to the waning moon for 14 days, and then pour the water over the places where the worm occurs. Enough water should be used so that the soil is moistened through to the depth where the worm lives. To counteract the degeneration of the potato, Dr. Steiner suggested cutting the seed potato into little pieces, each containing only a single eye. This process should be repeated the following year. Section C, reported by the horticulturalist Franz Lippert. Under trees suffering from woolly apple aphid, Erysoma lanigerum, a ring of nasturtiums, Tropelea majus, should be planted. Section D, reported by the agronomist and physician Count Adalbert von Kaiserling. In answer to a question by Count Karl von Kaiserling concerning smut in cereal crops, Dr. Steiner suggested planting stinging nettles around the fields. Part 4, on companion plants. Section A, reported by the agronomist Ernst Stegmann. As border plants for cereals, Dr. Steiner indicated dead nettle, Lamium, and sainfoin, which should be planted 4 to 5 meters apart. For root crops and potatoes, horseradish would be appropriate. It need only be planted at the four corners of the plot, but must be removed every year. Section B, reported by the biochemist Ehrenfried E. Pfeiffer. As border plants for vegetable gardens, Dr. Steiner mentioned sainfoin, dandelion, and horseradish. Part 5, on the biodynamic preparations. Section A, reported by the biochemist Ehrenfried E. Pfeiffer. On a walk through the Dornach and Arlesheim plantings, Dr. Steiner recommended the following method for strengthening preparation 500, horn manure, before applying it on meadows and land where fruit trees grow. Take a few fruits and a handful of leaves of the trees in question, and make a decoction of these in a liter of water. Then add this fruit tea to the bucket in which the content of the cow horn is being stirred. To strengthen sick and feeble fruit trees, dig a circular trench to about a hand's depth, corresponding to the edge of the tree's crown, and into this pour large quantities of the stirred preparation 500. For the horn silica preparation 501, Dr. Steiner said it would also suffice to fill the horn with a bean-sized piece of powdered quartz that had been mixed and kneaded together with soil from the field to be sprayed. If a little bit of this were dissolved and stirred, this would still contain enough silica radiation. Part 6, on spiritual beings. Section A. Report by the agronomist and farm advisor Emanuel Vögele of a conversation between Rudolf Steiner and Kurt Walter at the Guldesmühle on August 12, 1920. Emanuel Vögele could not be present for the actual conversation, but upon his return he converted Kurt Walter's notes into the following report. The beings of the elemental kingdom, the gnomes, undines, sylphs, and salamanders, help build up and form the plants. These beings were led and influenced by certain higher beings, who are now withdrawing from this activity. Just as at certain times these higher beings withdraw their influence within human beings and apply themselves to higher tasks. The elemental spirits are thus left to themselves, and other spirits, Lucifer, Ahriman, seize them and draw them away from their work in forming the plants. The result will be a diminution of the spiritual forces of the plants, and a gradual general atrophy, against which even artificial fertilizers will not help. What must now be striven for is that human beings familiarize themselves with the elemental kingdom, that they attempt to come in connection with these elemental spirits. In a sense, human beings must take over and prevent other powers from using the elemental kingdom, and must strive to influence these spirits in such a way that they continue to assist in the growth of plants. If human beings are able to cultivate these kinds of forces in themselves, they will become priests as farmers. If it is not possible to bring about such a connection, then in a few decades, human beings will have to experience that the yield and quality of the products of the fields are diminishing and that no remedy can be found. The Undines take part in the formation of dew. These spirits, too, are on the verge of being drawn away from their previous activities by other beings. In time, this would have the consequence that the formation of dew would gradually cease. Here, too, human beings must strive to bring their influence to bear. A further task for human beings is to live consciously with the rhythm of the seasons, namely, to experience nature in spring through the physical body, in summer through the etheric body, in autumn through the astral body, and in winter through the ego. With such an attitude, a spring planting, for example, will have a completely different mood than that of an autumn planting. In order to gain a spiritual relationship to the animal kingdom, the human being must penetrate to the group souls of the animal genera. One can already perceive, and this will increase significantly, that the instincts of the animals are becoming weaker. For example, animals will no longer avoid poisonous plants in their fodder, but will rather eat them along with the rest. When human beings penetrate to the group souls, they can then compensate, for example, for the weakening of the animal's instincts. The animals can thereby be helped. And that is the end of my reading of the agriculture course by Rudolf Steiner. I would like to thank very much the Biodynamic Gardening Association in Kimberton for allowing me to do this, and I hope that people will find these useful in their lives. If you have any inclination, please contact them and gift them with any types of money or support that you can. Thank you so much.